Okay, so we'll be hearing actually a little bit more from Steve Wiggenstein at 8:30. He's going to read a selection from, is it a newer piece that you're going to read? It's a published piece. Okay, great. Excellent, excellent. Well, right now, we have Debbie Nolan. She was our first surprise, our first magical entity to appear before us when we were planning SpoFest. Debbie Nolan and James, the brainchild of SpoFest, right here. I've been performing with James at Poetry Interludes with Travis DeMoss, and we decided to create an entire spoken word event instead of Poetry Interludes. Now, Debbie, James and I have known for a long time. She taught my first creative writing class that I was ever in. I was in there with Jim. She brought us to our first poetry readings, so it's her fault. It's all her fault, really. Tell you a little bit about Debbie. Some of you might recognize her. She taught at State Fair Community College for 29 years, retired in 2004. She was named Instructor of the Year in 89 and received the Governor's Award for Excellence in Teaching in 93. She authored the college's official history book, The Legacy of Plywood U, A History of State Fair Community College. And that was, of course, their original name, Plywood University, right? I'm, of course, an alumnus. Her poetry has appeared in numerous literary journals and children's publications. And she was a featured poet at the Montserrat Poetry Festival in 2009 and 2010. So give it up for Debbie Nolan.
Thank you, Steve. It's fun to be here. I always love this kind of gathering, people who write and who are interested in writing. So I look forward to sharing with you this evening. I'm so proud of my students. I can't remember how long ago it was that I had them. So I don't think the human memory lasts that long. But it was fairly early in the game, I think. And I'm just proud that they still write, that they still enjoy it, that they still look for ways to share writing in a public forum such as this. And so my first few poems I'm going to share with you this evening are haiku, solely because James likes haiku. So these are for James. It was my privilege, I'm going to guess that this was maybe 4 or 5, 6 years ago, to attend an intercession class down at Missouri State University. My daughter was going to school there, and she was out on choir tour, so I got to live in her apartment and be a student for a whole week in a university where no one knew me, and it was so much fun. But I took a haiku class, and I wrote like 60 haiku in 4 days, and it was intense. And so anyway, that resulted in a collection of haiku that I call Rustic Seasons. So I'll be reading you a haiku from each season at this time. The first one from spring. I learned in my haiku class that you're supposed to read haiku twice, that they go by so quickly that you read them once and then you let it kind of sit there and then you read it again. So I'm going to do that because that's what I learned to do. I also learned in my haiku class that you should, according to my instructor, not do a lot with figurative language in a haiku. Let the image work, and if you can, juxtapose two contrasting images that somehow create some unity in spite of that contrast. So that's what I've tried to do. So I'll have you listen for that. From spring. Rainbow spans the sky. Below, the trail of a snail crosses the front step. Again. Rainbow spans the sky. Below, the trail of a snail crosses the front step. From summer. Skyscrapers go up. Two ants move a crumb of bread across brick sidewalks. Again, skyscrapers go up. Two ants move a crumb of bread across brick sidewalks. From autumn. Out in the bean field, grasshoppers spin through the air. The old windmill creaks. Again, out in the bean field, grasshoppers spin through the air. The old windmill creaks. And from winter, Orion's in the sky. On the ground, hounds are baying. Yellow eyes shine down. Again, Orion's in the sky. On the ground, hounds are baying. yellow eyes shine down. My dad was an avid coon hunter. So, and then I have a little epilogue that doesn't really go with the season. When I took the haiku class, our instructor, whose name was Jim Jones, not that one. His name was Jim Jones, and he taught us about some of the great Japanese masters of haiku, the foremost of whom was a guy named Basho. Basho, the father of haiku, wrote back in the 1600s in Japan, known as the father of haiku. And I guess, you know, we had taken the week so seriously so long, I guess I couldn't help writing this epilogue, so I hope that you appreciate this. Whose haiku are best? Basho, the professor said. I said, Gesundheit. Those are my haiku. By the way, none of the things I'm reading tonight have I ever read before in any public forum of any kind, except this next one. I did read it for, something one time. But I don't read it if my husband is with me. It's awkward. It's called Flashback, and it's about the Vietnam experience. My husband is a Vietnam veteran. I'm very proud of him for his service to his country. And I think that, yes, thank you. I think that with the recent wars on foreign soil in Afghanistan and such, that this has continued meaning. I think it applies maybe in any family where there's a veteran involved, and so this is called Flashback. Your cry pierces my sleep like a shotgun blast. A small circle of impact exploding into a familiar pattern of panic. I often hear this cry, shrill and unnatural like the war itself. A never-ending strip of negatives reprinting themselves over and over in your mind when sleep catches you off guard. What images haunt you now? Dead babies in the river? The shot-away face of a girl your daughter's age? The fixed stare of a dead buddy I never met? This unrelenting jungle has always stood between us. We always reach delicately around it to embrace. Our words never walk together that forbidden ground. This split second is as close as we ever come. You cry out, and I waken. I know not to touch, but I say your name to rout the deadly dream. You mumble thanks and turn over. I curl myself around you, trying to feel your body through the dense foliage between us. Yeah. Then a poem from my dad who's battling lung cancer called Pieces. The pieces of a jigsaw puzzle lie scrambled on a table in the waiting room of the cancer center. Shades of white, pink, lavender that somehow combine to depict four masked revelers at Mardi Gras. Patients and others who wait stop and try this one here, try that one there, occasionally extracting a match from the pools of similarly grouped, similarly colored, jagged pieces that seem to multiply like bad cells. The box lid stands as a testament to how things should be. After a week or so, the frame is complete, and one half-faced reveler peers back. Around the corner, the celebration continues. The partiers sit in a circle, trying to find pieces of lives newly shattered, while tubes of clear liquid drip hope. Okay, and now I'm going to plug my new blog, which is not a poetry blog exclusively, but it does contain some poetry. I try to write in all the genres. That's one thing I tried to do. I also try to record experiences and perspectives on grandparenting, since I'm a new grandparent of three wonderful little people ages 3, 2, and 7 months. two of whom are at my house right now. So this is not a poem in and of itself. It's a prose piece, but it's short. And I wanted to read it because it's about writing. It's about what happens when we write. It's about what inspires us. And it's one of the entries in the blog. So if you were ever to look at that, you would see this piece somewhere there in the middle of the ones I've written so far. I started this actually on March the 9th this year because my husband was home after having shoulder surgery, and I was stuck around the house because I was kind of on call, you know, the little bell that rings and you hop and go see what he needs. And so I was around the house and I decided, well, I think I'll start a blog. It'll get me writing, keep me writing. So I've enjoyed it. But this particular little piece, very short, is called Barefoot and Blognant. Barefoot and Blognant. The other morning I was swinging a leg over the side of the bed when Papa, to whom I sometimes allow partial credit for the fact that we have grandkids, asked the obvious, "Are you getting up?" "I have to," I said. "I have a blog in my head." "Should we call the doctor?" he asked, "or do you just need to blow your nose?" "I just need to get to the coffee pot and the computer," I said, "in that order." The truth was, I was rapidly nearing the end of my most recent blognancy, and I was about to pop. I grabbed my robe and headed downstairs. I have always found that this is the way writing works for me. Somewhere deep inside of me, without my being fully aware of it, an idea is conceived and begins to grow. Over time, it takes nourishment from me, and I detect a faint heartbeat. Turns of phrase, description, and metaphor begin to flesh it out, and it begins to wriggle and kick. It grows large and makes me uncomfortable. Finally, that idea reaches full term and is ready to be delivered. Inevitably, I find the labor process itself gives the actual shape to the piece, which sometimes delivers easily and sometimes has to be induced. Although each piece has some genetic resemblance to its siblings, it assumes its own unique appearance and personality. I feel really proud when my family and friends compliment me on the new arrival. One thing about it, the subject of grandparenting promises to keep me fertile for a long time. In fact, I need to end this piece now. It seems I may have been blognant with twins. Has that been 10, Steve? Okay, thank you very much.